Season to Taste, a Quinn Martin production. Hello.
Hello.
Well, you're all regular listeners now, so we can cut to the chase. You know how this works. We watch some Doctor Who, we talk about some Doctor Who, we pick some new Doctor Who to watch.
There's a whole lot of Doctor Who going on there, Will.
It is. So, Matthew, we have just watched
The End of the World.
And it was fab.
Yes, it was. It was really very, very good indeed. I would say it was the episode that made me fall in love with the show all over again, fall in love with the new series. I think it's brilliant.
It kind of encapsulates Russell's manifesto for Doctor Who. In one story you have, for a start, just his own brand of imaginative strangeness, from the creatures that he comes up with to the oddness of Cassandra, and even things like the Doctor's gentle eroticism giving Sutekh's gift of breath to Jabe, the throwaway lines about Cassandra having a sex change, which are entirely unnecessary, but a nice, ridiculous touch and very much part of RTD's, what we jokingly call the gay agenda, but his generally liberal approach to the series, and then even down to the pop music with Soft Cell and Britney Spears. It has a real modern, upbeat, fresh, creative feel to it.
What I like about it, and why I think it is such a brave and great choice to do as a second episode, is just it's so ambitious, because Doctor Who could have played it safe. And you know, you look at some of the proposals for how they might have brought the series back in the 90s, and other people at the BBC's ideas for how they could have brought the series back, and what's notable is none of them had half the ambition of that episode. There's dozens of aliens in it.
It's yes.
Got the Earth blowing up 5 billion years in the future.
It's got so many special effects.
Yeah, it's full of special
beautiful
effects.
Beautiful special effects as well.
But really clever special effects as well. Cassandra, such a clever, brilliant idea. Such a neat parody of the whole culture of body sculpting and, you know, nip tuck, but taken to an extreme. And I just love that he's picked up that idea and pushed it as far as it feasibly could go.
And it's that very traditional science fiction concept of actually using it to satirise the modern day.
Yeah. I think, for me, one thing that I really do like about the episode is it's almost like a synthesis of the whole of 1960s Doctor Who in that one story, because you've got the kind of weird group of aliens, which is like something from a William Hartnell story.
The alien delegates from the Dark Master Plan.
Exactly. You've got the Earth exploding from the Ark. That's the kind of ambitious thing that they used to do in the William Hartnell era. And it's bizarre, the Hartnell era, because they didn't really know how to make it, they actually did do things that were ridiculously over-ambitious compared to later years. I mean, J&T would never have attempted to show the Earth blowing up, whereas they thought nothing of blowing up whole planets in the Hartnell era and showing it on screen.
Mm. And they had the Beatles in the Hartnell era
absolutely.
As well.
And then right at the end, just as you got right at the end of the 60s, right at the end of that, you've got the Doctor being revealed as a Time Lord, and you suddenly learn a little secret about his people, which hasn't been previously touched.
Yes, and you have the discussion of the war in The End of the World, and Jabe looking him up on her little handheld device.
iPad.
Her iPad mini. Yeah, this episode sets up so much, doesn't it? You have the throwaway remarks. Well, not, you have the big discussion of the TARDIS translation circuits. You have the introduction of the psychic paper, which is such a part of Doctor Who now. And you get to see the TARDIS in action properly for the first time. It's wonderfully. And again, they could have gone, well, you know, the Doctor's got a really powerful spaceship. It needs to be brilliant. And actually, in all those close-ups, it's a really, really rickety console with buttons that look like they're going to fall off in his hand. It feels exactly right for Doctor Who, and very much as the old series would have done it, and not feeling that, well, in the modern day people wouldn't accept that. It has to be some kind of Star Trek-style perfect console. We do have that hideous green light in the TARDIS.
I think it is kind of hideous, but it's also kind of alien and unsettling. The TARDIS interior isn't a pleasant, cosy environment. I like the fact that it's actually quite strange and almost sickly.
It moves away from that kind of Fifth Doctor era thing, Fourth Doctor era, where people have rooms that they kind of get and sleep in, and instead it's very much something you travel in and that you don't want to spend a lot of time.
To be honest though, would you really want to spend time in that awful sterile white TARDIS of the old series? Or the weird gothic nightmare of the Paul McGann movie? The TARDIS, I don't think, has ever been a cosy, safe environment.
Well, you said the Paul McGann one is a bit like a country house, actually. It's a bit...
Yeah, I suppose. But
you could imagine there being a four-poster bed to one side of it.
I suppose, yeah. I'm sure Grace would have installed one if she'd got half the chance, the dirty slut. But what I like about that kind of weird green interior of the TARDIS, in the very first episode of the old series, the TARDIS isn't a safe, cosy environment. It's a weird, alien, unsettling kind of otherness. And you still get that sense from the way that TARDIS interior is designed now. It's not quite...
Mm.
It's other, it's alien. You can understand why Rose is unsettled when she goes in there. It's so jarring.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. The TARDIS shouldn't just be a nice, comfy place. It should be bizarre and unknowable.
And also, brilliantly, when it lands, you get a microwave-style ping. and then all you hear in the TARDIS is creaking. It's kind of the idea that it is this old, slightly decrepit box. And I thought it was a really good episode. I had a few tiny reservations about little bits, but I mean, it's 95% brilliant. The plot is slightly contrived, particularly in respect of how the Doctor saves the day. The idea that there is this... I mean, he even makes a joke of it in the episode, but the idea, when you set up all this other lovely plot and situation, that really he has to cross a gangway to reach a rather inopportunely placed switch is a bit of a stretch. I do like, and I honestly don't know whether this is Russell deliberately. He may have written about this one or the other, but the idea that... what is it in that final climactic scene that's getting in the way of the Doctor's success? Oh yes, it's three very big fans.
I think Russell is not exactly renowned for sometimes the strength of his, the kind of technical strength of his endings, and that's the first but by no means the last of the Russell episodes that's resolved by the Doctor pressing a switch. Yeah, but the flip side is, that's not really the point. It's a big reset button, but you actually care about the characters.
Yeah, absolutely. The characters are all perfect.
And there's that horrible bit just before that I commented on when we were watching it, where Jabe goes up in flame, but it's more horrible because you only see it in the background.
Mm.
Snatches, glimpses between the fan spinning, Jabe's mossy snatch. You just see a glimpse of this column of flame where she's clearly gone up, and then obviously her ashes afterwards. And that's more horrid, I think, than what you might have got in the mid-80s, which is lingering shots of her face melting.
And it's actually quite a violent story. You have that's quite a shocking moment. You have Rose being whacked around the head with a claw and knocked out in a reasonably graphic way. And then all the other aliens, or many of the aliens, burning up. Although, again, only in a kind of implied way. And the steward being off-screen roasted to death, too. The other two things are slightly less than perfect. They're just tiny little bits of dialogue. And the dialogue's wonderful. The Doctor's got some great lines in particular. There's the line where Jabe is asking who Rose is and suggesting, you know, is she the Doctor's wife? Is she his girlfriend? Is she his concubine? And you've had your three things, and you've had your joke, and concubine is a nice punchline. And then she says prostitute. And I even think, well, prostitute is kind of like concubine, but rather less Saturday night family viewing. And I don't know why...
It does feel quite a jarring moment, that. Yeah, it doesn't quite work for me either.
In The Talons of Wen Chiang, you have prostitutes, but no one ever says that they're prostitutes, and so no child ever has to say to his mother, "Mummy, what's a prostitute?"
Well, you kind of got anyone who knows what the words mean anyway would have got the point when she said concubine.
Exactly.
I don't think you needed.
And the other tiny dialogue thing, something that's always slightly annoyed me just because I love my puns, is in those long scenes of the Doctor and Jay talking while they're searching for the engines, the strangely concrete engine area on this ship. He talks about her having forests everywhere and roots everywhere in her company, and obviously the line should be, "You have branches everywhere," I think. But, and I've always thought, found that slightly disappointing, that there is a fantastic tree-based pun that they don't go for. Watching it that time, I did think, I noticed both times, they're quite long tracking shots. I get the impression that they go for realism in those conversations, and if the actors have gone maybe slightly off script, they wouldn't retake them, because they're actually very long, single-shot takes. I might be wrong, but I wonder whether... I probably am wrong, but I wonder whether in the script actually it did say branches, and it's just that in the way that the conversation was going, Eccleston said, because he says oddly, "You've got forests everywhere, you've got roots everywhere," and it feels to me like he's clutching for the word branches and isn't quite getting it. But that may be, I may be doing Eccleston a disservice, but it's a really natural, lovely scene anyway, and obviously you have that wonderful moment at the end of it where Jabe's telling him that she knows who he is.
I think it's a brilliantly judged and perfectly... It happens at the perfect moment. That's the best second episode that I think you could have had for the revived series. I've said how ambitious I think it is. I also think, clearly, they were never going to, particularly in that first year, they were never going to have the budget and probably never going to have the desire to actually show the Time War. But it's so, so clever to actually show what happened to Gallifrey by implication, by showing the Earth blow up. I think it's so clever that you kind of get the story and the horror of the Doctor's home planet getting blown up by having Rose live through that experience. I just think it's such a neat way of bypassing all of the desire to see the Time War.
And it brings them closer together. It establishes it nice and early on, ahead of the Daleks coming back. And you have that really lovely scene at the end as well, that in a series which is all about grounding it, you've already had her phone call to her mum, and all about connecting with the modern day. You actually then just have that wonderful scene at the end in London / Cardiff of people wandering the streets and going to buy chips.
And it's lovely, again, the camera focusing on the Doctor and Rose as all of the people wander about them in Cardiff, in the same way that the camera lingered on them as all the aliens were kind of wandering around them on Platform One, and making that implicit link that, you know, the aliens might look alien and Rose might have had that culture shock, but at the end of the day they're just another bunch of people. So it's interesting that the big monster in that story is actually the last human, and all of the traditional monsters are actually the victims of humanity. So I think it, you know, and Cassandra is explicitly a racist. She's kind of made out to be this awful human purist.
Yeah, and like so many racists, is a complete hypocrite.
So I think it... I just think the story works. I think you could analyse it on many, many levels. But for me, the biggest thing about it is, wow, Doctor Who is not going to just do period dramas set on Earth. It's not going to limit itself to only telling stories set in the 100 years back or forth. It's going to do loads of aliens. It's going to do planets exploding. It's going to be big and ambitious, and if it's only got 13 episodes, by goodness, it's going to make sure that they count. I loved it. I thought it was really brilliant.
And of course, most importantly, I have to just confirm, Matthew, when Rose gets trapped and the sun filter's descending and the Doctor's trying to get her out and the sun filter's coming down and then it goes back up again and then it starts coming back down, what is the line that
stop
Rose...
fucking about,
Rose. Stop fucking about. That's exactly what she says, and the Doctor says, "I'm not mucking about," thereby catching anyone who might have thought the Doctor Who sneaked post-Watershed swearing into its second episode. That's what I think happened, and I won't be told that it wasn't. So, the end of the world. That is the whole Christopher Eccleston era done for Season 2 Taste.
So just before we move on, what do you think of Eccleston? Because this is going to be our only chance to comment on the Ninth Doctor.
Meh. No, not really. I thought he was really
okay, moving on.
Every now and again, and then this is true of every Doctor Who show and every actor in anything, there's an odd line where I think I'm not sure you've got that quite right. But he, even in that episode, you know, it's the second episode we've seen him in, he really gets the whole balance between hero and humanoid and alien. There's so many little touches in the way he plays it where he really doesn't seem quite human in the way he holds himself. Even though he has the most casual high street outfit of any Doctor, he does have, in his facial expressions and the way he acts, a bit of goofy, eccentric alienness to emphasise that actually he isn't just the man you would meet every day.
I like the fact that he seems to be having fun with the part, his kind of little dance when Tainted Love's playing on the iPod jukebox, and the fact that he's clearly loving showing off his TARDIS to Rose. And then he can turn on a penny and become this vengeful, angry character at the end who's quite willing to stand by and watch Cassandra pay for her crimes in the most gruesome possible way.
I don't know how much of it is Eccleston's own knowledge of the series, or it certainly is there in Russell's script, and it's there, I think, instinctively in his performance, but he genuinely has completely grasped the idea of what the character of the Doctor is and how to play it.
I totally buy into him as the Doctor. I think he's really, really strong. I think Russell's concept of the Doctor is pretty consistent, even when it goes to David Tennant. I don't think the character is massively different. I'm thinking particularly of, you know, David Tennant making the Sycorax leader plunge to his death because he doesn't give second chances. And you get the sense that that's very much the same character as the Ninth Doctor. He's not prepared to give Cassandra a second chance. She's done something utterly dreadful, and that's it. She's made her bed, now she has to lie in it.
And actually, I mean, the curious irony is, not that we should think ahead too much, that the Doctor does his No Second Chances speech in The Christmas Invasion. The next story is New Earth. We meet Cassandra again, and he actually gives her a kind of second chance at the end of that story.
He does. But, we're starting to comment on New Earth now, but I suppose it's fair because it is Cassandra's only return appearance. But he gives her a second chance for the very specific reason that she sacrificed herself to save a whole bunch of aliens. So New Earth is almost the flip side of the end of the world, because here Cassandra's willing to kill a bunch of aliens for her own ends. And next time we see her, the Doctor coming into her life, and her experiences have changed her to the extent that she's willing to sacrifice herself to save a bunch of aliens.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, that is a second chance by definition.
Yeah.
No, so I think we can agree Eccleston does a good job, and in some of the emotional moments he's really very powerful indeed, particularly when he's being the hologram in The Parting of the Ways.
Would you like to see more of Christopher Eccleston if you got the chance?
I think we see more than enough of him in Dalek, frankly, and I wish. You mean in more? I'd certainly like him to be in a special for the 50th anniversary. Even if it was just him, Tennant and Matt Smith, I would be happy with that. I think.
Do you like him to be kind of say, I seem to be stuck up here, or do you like it to be a bit more than that?
I'd be happy for you to be much more than that. I'd like to see them working together and interacting, because also, not only does that give you more of them, but it gives you a different dynamic from just... There's no point just trying to recreate what you've already moved on from.
Yeah.
And while it'd be fine, easy to say now, I wish you'd stayed for another year or two, David Tennant is very good, and I wouldn't want to sacrifice David Tennant in Series 2 for Christopher Eccleston in Series 2. They'd have been very different, but while it would have been nice at the time, it did allow us to get regeneration established quite quickly, and allowed all sorts of different things that we wouldn't have been able to do. But we the fans who make the show, that we would have been able to do. But yeah, so I think it would have been nice if he'd done more, but I would happily see him come back. I'd happily have him do audios. I'd happily have him in an anniversary store, and I'd love to see him bouncing off Tennant. And actually, that would be a chance to see. No idea what would happen, it probably won't happen, but all very busy people, but it would be entertaining to actually, as you just said, they're written kind of, maybe in kind of the same way. It'd be nice to see their differences emphasised by them actually having to bounce off each other.
Yeah.
So that is Christopher Eccleston done. That means we've now completed
two Doctors.
The Eighth Doctor and the Ninth Doctor.
Where's the randomiser going to take us this time, Will? On our journey through 35 active years of Doctor Who.
Actually, I've watched them. I'd say maybe 20 active years and 15 passive years, but we'll... All right, randomiser, pick a year. Well, whoop-de-doo!
Give us a clue.
Well, only last night you said you wanted to watch Terror of the Autons.
And I always want to watch Terror of the Autons.
And I said, maybe when we do the podcast, season 8 will come up. It hasn't, but it is pretty close. We've already done The Time Monster from season 9.
Yeah.
And now we have to pick a story from season 10.
Oh, okay.
To Pertwee. So, the options are The Three Doctors, Carnival of Monsters, Frontier in Space, Planet of the Daleks, and The Green Death. That's actually an embarrassment of riches.
It is actually one of Pertwee's strongest seasons, isn't it? Wow.
In fact, you were only a moment ago referencing Hartnell on the screen in The Three Doctors. Oh.
I kind of want to watch The Three Doctors for the anniversary. What else? So Carnival of Monsters is obviously fantastic.
We have Katie Manning's Farmyard Noises.
Yeah.
The Dreschigs, the first appearance of Ian Marta in the series, the Space Polari, Frontier in Space, we have some wonderful Master action, and the last appearance of the Delgado Master.
That lovely, well, it's not really a twist ending now, but at the time, a really neat surprise ending.
Yeah. We've got Planet of the Daleks, another Bernard Horsfall story, another some invisible creatures, some Technicolor Daleks. We have the Green Death with perhaps the single most touching moment in the whole old Doctor Who series.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, not that it matters, but it's worth noting that, unless I'm wrong, The Three Doctors and Carnival of Monsters are 4 episodes and the others are 6 episodes.
Correct.
Let's discount Planet of the Daleks.
Really? Okay. I'd be quite happy to watch Planet of the Daleks because I think it's kind of the most... It's the only kind of colour 1960s Dalek story, really, isn't it? It's got all the complexity of any Terry Nation script.
Is that you praising a Terry Nation script, or is that damning with faint praise?
I think it's both. I was about to say, I'd probably discount The Green Death.
Okay.
I can't really justify why. It's just
is it one of the over-familiarity ones? Because
I did watch it on the BBC in the 90s. It was one of those that was broadcast.
And Planet of the Daleks.
I don't know. I just don't fancy watching it.
That's fair enough.
I can't explain it.
I'm quite tempted, but that's fair enough. I do fancy Frontier in Space a bit, mainly for Delgado, but also because it's quite a good fun story.
And it's one of those, it's like The Time Monster, it's one of those where, because it's 6 episodes and I've watched it as a oneer, I've kind of started wandering off and making cups of tea halfway through and I haven't properly...
I've only just remembered it has the whole Doctor going to prison on the moon.
It has, yeah.
Section, doesn't it? The Carnival of Monsters is quite fun. I'm between Frontier in Space and Three Doctors, but I think it would be a bit of a missed opportunity in the 50th anniversary year not to watch the 10th anniversary story and sneak in some more Troughton, sneak in some more Hartnell.
Mm.
I haven't watched it for ages. I don't think it's the best one of the season, but...
No, but I think it's the one that... It's interesting, because last time we did a Pertwee, it was The Time Monster, and we kind of came to the conclusion that how do you really follow The Time Monster, and The Three Doctors is the answer to that, and I think there's a few interesting things that we would find watching it.
You mean by how do you follow it, do you mean like where do you take the series after?
Exactly,
stuff?
Yeah.
No, that makes sense, and we have literally just been talking about if you had a 50th anniversary story that was Eccleston, Tennant and Smith. So I think it makes sense that the next thing we watch is Hartnell, Troutman, Pertwee.
I agree. Let's go for it.
Cool. Three Doctors it is. We'll let you know how that goes in episode 9 of Season to Taste. Bye for now.
Bye. That was the worst attempt to force out a sentence I've ever heard. Sorry, that's quite impressively bad. Sorry.
That's nice. That's nice, yeah.